We're talking about a shortage of school bus drivers. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. First day of school for most students in Wisconsin is exactly 2 weeks away. And transportation companies all over the state that provide school districts with bus services, they're scrambling to hire enough drivers. Dan Cobison of Cobison Buses said the shortage of drivers is the worst his company has seen.
When it gets this tight, it becomes, you know, every little bit it matters. Is the windshield clean? Is the bus warm? Is you know, that's the kind of stuff we're looking at. We're trying to make it an enticing job.
Are you a school bus driver? What is the most difficult part of your job? Has the driver shortage affected you? Join in at 800-642-1234. Rob Menser is WPR's Rural Communities reporter. He's based in Wausau, and he joins us from our studios in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, Kate. Thanks.
So school bus companies are having a difficult time here finding bus drivers. What is the scope of this problem here in Wisconsin?
So it's a bit of a challenge to quantify it. The great majority of school buses in Wisconsin, about 75%, are privately contracted. So the drivers aren't school district employees. They're employees of a lot of big companies like First Student or other companies that run these school buses. And because they're private companies, they don't have to release specific numbers. But all the people I talk to, including owners of bus contractors and the director of the state school bus association, said that this is an acute problem and that it is statewide. And one source in my story said, Dan Cobison, you played a clip from, said it's the worst that he has seen it. And he's a third generation leader of his company.
So are there hot spots, Rob? Are there parts of Wisconsin that we're seeing the biggest issues?
So it certainly is statewide. As a general matter, there are a couple of factors. So it tracks the labor market, right? What is causing this is that unemployment is extremely low. Driving a bus is a part-time job, and so when most people who want a full-time work can get it, it becomes harder to hire a part-time driver. So places where it is especially acute include like affluent suburbs, actually. It's quite hard to hire someone for this sort of part-time work, according to my sources. And also in some rural areas where just demographic changes, aging populations, just makes the pool smaller. Those are some areas that are having trouble as well.
Well, let's look at the working conditions here. Who are the people who have generally turned to bus driving in this part-time job, and how have you seen that changing?
Yeah, so this is right. This is the way to understand this, and this really is a story that drives home the ways that the economy is really interconnected, right? So it's part-time work. It's a couple hours. People can take a couple of routes in the morning, a couple in the afternoon, if they want to. Some people work only one or the other, So in a lot of cases, this would be good sources for bus drivers for these companies would be people who are like semi-retired, maybe baby boomers who have recently retired but want to have a little structure to their day and pick up a little extra money. Another source would be shift workers in factories, somebody who can work, who can drive a school bus before they go on to work second shift or the other way around after their shift ends. And these are cases where both of those specific pools are pressed, because in manufacturing, in a lot of cases, those workers are working overtime hours. They either don't have the time or don't need – they're not looking for extra money if they're having sometimes required overtime in a lot of manufacturing workplaces. And boomers, where this was a common thing for somebody who is sort of semi-retired, and maybe if you're 64, 65, that seemed like a good way to make some extra money. It becomes less reasonable or just less desirable for folks who are in their, you know, mid 70s. And so as
they're aging out.
Yeah. And so they're aging out from sort of semi-retired to like retired. And then that pool becomes smaller.
We're looking at the shortage of school bus drivers with Rob Menser. He's WPR's rural communities reporter based in Wausau. You can join in with what it looks like in your part of the state at 800-642-1234. Rob, how have the struggles faced by the dairy industry impacted the number of drivers looking for work?
Yeah, so I found this absolutely fascinating, and again, this is a bit of a sign of how interconnected we all are. I would not have predicted or thought that a ripple effect from Wisconsin's dairy crisis would be to exacerbate the shortage of school bus drivers, but it does. The reason is because in a lot of rural areas, dairy farmers on small farms historically fit that bill of somebody who has a somewhat flexible schedule and who is looking for a little extra money from part-time work. So I spoke with Steve Reckley, who's the owner of Brandt Buses in Manitowoc. He said, you used to drive around rural Wisconsin and you would see a school bus parked at every dairy farm. But as the state is losing 600 some dairy farms per year, of course, some of those farmers are retiring, but some are doing it because they're in the dairy crisis. They're forced to find jobs off the farm, maybe in town, and those jobs are not the sort that allow them to sort of like duck out at 3 p.m. to drive a school bus route.
What does pay look like?
So this is, you know, anytime there's a shortage in the labor market, you would expect to see wages go up, and wages have gone up. It starts at $17 an hour in general. It could be higher in some parts of the state or for some particular companies or whatever. But that's about what you're looking at, and that's a reasonable pay rate. It's not, you know, now when if you're trying to attract new workers, it makes sense to raise wages, and that has happened. But it's not like other workforces in some ways, because it's part time. Not everyone is looking for part time work, and because it has these high barriers to entry. You have to have a commercial driver's license. There are quite strict drug testing and background checking.
You have to have a physical.
Yeah, there's a mm-hmm. physical indeed, and a motor vehicle history test. Those are good things. Like everyone that I spoke to said, like, this is how it has to be. It's a great responsibility to transport these, you know, children every day, twice a day. But what it does mean is that the pool of workers just shrinks again. So, you know, you see in manufacturing work, in a lot of cases, there are manufacturers who have quite aggressive programs going on right now in this economy to reach out to people who may be getting out of jail or may be in recovery from addictions. And like that's good. That helps get those people in the workforce. But those people are not eligible for to drive a school bus, and so that's another source of pressure.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for describing the situation to us.
Thank you.
Rob Menser is WPR's rural communities reporter based in Wausau, and he joined us from our studios there in Wausau. Coming up, we look at the state of our cranberry industry and how trade negotiations with China are affecting it. Are you a cranberry grower? How has your crop been this year? How much work does it take to grow cranberries? Are you concerned about the trade war? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the cranberry harvest here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than half of the world's supply of cranberries are grown right here in Wisconsin. Cranberries are grown on 21,000 acres across 20 counties in the central and northern part of our state. But there are issues weighing heavily on the industry, one being this ongoing trade dispute with China. Cranberry industry is one market that's come to rely on Chinese trade deals, and China said this month it'll stop buying billions of dollars worth of U.S. egg products. So are you a cranberry grower? How is your crop compared to years past? Do you work at a cranberry bog? What do you do? What is harvest like? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Tom Lochner is executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association, which is based in Wisconsin Rapids. Tom, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
So our state continues to lead the nation in cranberry production. Would you consider this to be a successful year for cranberries? Can you give us a bit more about the forecast?
Well, the forecast that we've seen over the course of the last week put us at about an average crop, up maybe 1% from last year. Somewhere around 550 million pounds of fruit will be taken off of Wisconsin farms this fall, which is, I would suspect most growers would say that's about an average crop. It's not a record, and it's not a really bad crop, but just an average crop for Wisconsin. And it comes at a time when we're starting to see inventories of fruit get back to normal levels based upon some actions that the industry's taken, and we're looking to grow markets as well down the road, and if returns to growers get back to a profitable level.
So it sounds like you're seeing stability. Do you expect to have a surplus crop this year?
No, I think that's the good news for Wisconsin growers and for growers across the country, that actions that we've taken as an industry to manage supply the last 2 years have paid off. Actually, I'm at a meeting in Massachusetts where they're looking at those numbers, and the inventories are down to the levels that we'd like to see them, and at the levels that we should see some improvement in prices for growers. Now, growers are like every other farmer, I think, are facing economic challenges. We're seeing costs of or the return to on fruit below the cost of our production, and it's been a tough number of years for growers, and it's been a slow return, but we have a lot of people that are working real hard on growing markets and getting those returns up. And at least the news that we're seeing the supply numbers go in the right direction is I think, good news for growers.
Well, Tom, you mentioned there Massachusetts. That's one state that grows mm-hmm. cranberries, Wisconsin being the leader. You had mentioned 5.6 million barrels of cranberries expected to be harvested this fall. So how big is 5.6 million barrels? Can you put that into perspective for us?
Sure. Wisconsin will produce about 60 to 65% of the U.S. crop this year. Massachusetts is the second largest producing area, and they're a little over 2 million barrels. So they're not quite half what we produce here in the Badger State. New Jersey produces maybe 500,000 to 600,000 barrels. They're the third largest, and then Oregon and Washington State are a little bit smaller than that. So Wisconsin by far leads the nation and the world in production. We do that on 21,000 acres, as you mentioned. The studies that have been done to evaluate the economic impact show that in Wisconsin, the cranberry industry provides about $1 billion in economic activity and impact, and provides about 3,400 jobs for Wisconsin residents. A lot of those jobs are in central Wisconsin around the growing regions, but also elsewhere. For example, there's a large processing plant in Kenosha that employs 300 or 400 people. So it has a statewide impact, and I think from our perspective, we're a world leader in cranberry production, and our growers are committed to being environmentally sensitive. We're multi-generational family growers. We have some growers that are the sixth generation taking over the farm now, and they're doing that with a passion for growing the crop and a passion for being in the business, and they survive by being innovative, adopting new technologies, and being environmentally sustainable.
We're looking at the cranberry industry, the upcoming harvest, and the market for this fruit with Tom Lochner. He's executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Have you ever harvested cranberries? What was the process like? What do you remember? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tom, what is it about our climate here in Wisconsin that makes it ideal for cranberries to grow?
Well, cranberries grew here in the wild for eons before the European settlement. So they're a native plant to Wisconsin, native to our wetlands in central and northern Wisconsin. And they we have the right conditions in terms of the environment as far as temperature. They're a perennial plant, so they require some dormancy during the winter. They require an acidic soil. They thrive in soil that's pH is 4.5 to 5.5, which is pretty acidic. We need to have a good supply of fresh, clean water for growing cranberries. Water is the lifeblood of the industry, so we have to have a responsibility to make sure that the water we're using is well taken care of. And we have just the right climate and for growing it. I also think that one of the things that sets Wisconsin apart is that we do have, in my opinion, some of the best growers in the world who are growing the crop, and we have the infrastructure in place to support them. The University of Wisconsin is a key partner for us. We work very closely with the UW Extension and College of Ag Life Sciences, integrated ag specialists who conduct research on cranberry production issues and then work with our growers to help them implement those best practices when they find answers, whether it's on how to control pests, whether it's nutrient management or water management.
So you're seeing a lot of evolution in the industry, that farmers continually evolve. Can I ask you, when will harvest start and how long does it run for?
We'll start probably about mid-September. There's some early crop that comes off to go to Canada for Canadian Thanksgiving. Generally, the first 10 days in October are the busiest, depending upon the weather, and we'll be wrapping up by the end of October. So it's about a six-week harvest window, with the first 2 weeks in October being the busiest part of the year.
And run through the process for us. How do you bring in cranberries?
Well, it's unique to all agricultural crops. We wet harvest all of our fruit here in Wisconsin, and depending upon what market you're in, if you're in the fresh fruit market, which is about 3 to 5% of the crop, that's the berries that people buy in bags at in the grocery store during the Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday season. That fruit is harvested with a mechanical picker. The beds are flooded to get the fruit to lift up because it will float on the vines. We go through with the picker, and then that fruit is transported to a warehouse where it's surface dried and put in storage and then packed out during the market season. With fresh fruit, we want to treat it very gently so we don't bruise it, so that it'll have good keeping quality. We're picking it in September and selling it in December, so we need to take extra special care with that fruit. The majority of the fruit is harvested for processing. Again, a grower will put on what's called a raking flood, maybe 6-8 inches of water. They go through with the mechanical harvesters that strip the fruit off of the vines, and they float on the water. Cranberries have 4 air pockets in them, so they will float. And then they corral them in one end of the bed, and they bring in some equipment that'll remove them from the bed, load them into trucks, and take them off to a receiving station where they're cleaned and put into a freezer storage to be processed during
That's when we see those beautiful images of like a sea of red when you've corralled all those cranberries. That's an amazing sight to see.
It is, and we'd encourage people to get out if they can. There's nothing better than an October day with a blue sky, Wisconsin's fall colors in the background, and a sea of red cranberries. That's a great visual, and it's a great thing to experience.
Tom Lochner, is there room for new growers in the industry? Do you see farmers, growers aging out at all? What's it like?
We're always in transition. I've been with the Growers Association for 30 years, and some of the people who are on my board now and I'm working with in leadership were rather young when I started, and I worked with their parents. But so we see a lot of transition from within the families, because it is a family farming operation, and it has been going on, as I said earlier, 5-6 generations are on the farms. We've seen some people come in. It's a very expensive investment up front for marsh. You're going to spend $30,000 to $40,000 an acre minimum to build a cranberry farm, and then once you get the vines planted, you wait 2 to 3 years before you get a crop, and 3 to 5 before you get to full production. I think right now our acreage here in Wisconsin has been at about 21,000 acres for the last 4 years. So we're and I think that's due to market conditions, obviously. But there are opportunities for people in cranberry. So we've had some discussions with different folks, and there's you name the occupation and the job skill, and there's a place for you in the cranberry industry, whether it's working on one of the farms, having a horticultural or an agricultural background, or in the processing side of things. We're hiring engineers, we hire production workers, and everything else that you can imagine. There's a tremendous opportunity for people that may be interested in getting involved in cranberries.
Well, let's pause right there with Tom Lochner, who heads up the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. We'll pick up the conversation after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at all facets of the cranberry industry here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Cranberries are big business in our state. We provide more than half of the world's supply, and cranberries generate $1 billion in state economic impact, thousands of jobs in the industry. So what will the trade war with China do to the cranberry industry? Last year, there was an oversupply. The USDA authorized the cranberry industry to hold back a portion of the crop from the market to try to reverse that downward trend in prices. Are you a cranberry grower and watching all of this? What will your harvest look like, and how much work does it take to grow cranberries? How do you think Wisconsin should manage yield? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Tom Lochner is head of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association, and he stays with us. Tom, let's turn to China now. We heard this month that it would suspend the purchases of billions of dollars in egg products in response to this recent decision by the U.S. to put 10% tariffs on $300 billion in Chinese goods. So how are Wisconsin cranberry growers looking at this trade war?
Well, I think from our perspective, we've seen a definite impact of the retaliatory tariffs on cranberries. The numbers that I last numbers I saw from USDA showed that we had lost sales of about $52 million since this whole thing started, and obviously that's not a good situation for us. We've invested actually quite heavily in the Chinese market over the last 3 or 4 years as an opportunity, and the market was just beginning to take off for sales of dried cranberries and cranberry juice. In talking with people at the meetings that were industry meetings that are going on today, they're still seeing those impacts. But I think for the long term, we're committed to continuing to build markets in China and India as well. We did shift some of our resources to other opportunity markets until the trade war plays out. We understand there's issues involved in there that are way beyond cranberries that have to do with everything from intellectual property to currency manipulation or whatever, and those things need to get sorted out, and we're trying to be patient during this to give the administration and the people in charge a chance to negotiate a deal that's going to be in the best interest of everybody in America, but it's definitely caused us to lose some sales opportunities into China. But we'll continue to look to grow markets elsewhere, and we're spending a lot of time.
Well, you mentioned China, India. How do other countries use our cranberries?
Well, the development of the dried cranberries, which people can buy in the stores, a lot of the cranberries that are going overseas are going over as dried cranberries, and then they're used in ingredients and in-country products. So actually European Union and UK are our largest markets. So those markets are using cranberries and baked goods. You see them in cereals. I know when we were in London a couple of years ago, we saw an awful lot of breakfast bars and scones and things like that with cranberries in it. So it's a real versatile product that can be put in all kinds of different products, and we're getting the companies in country to use them in their products. And as people in the U.S. know, there's a, or should know, or hope we hope they know that there's a cranberries are a very flexible and product that can be used in a whole host of different products and baking goods and so on.
Yeah. Well, Tom, note to self, when you stay in Wisconsin Rapids, do not ask for raisins on your oatmeal. Lesson no. learned, you ask for cranberries. What was I thinking?
Well, the good people in Wisconsin Rapids will help you with that. So
they were very nice about it. No, we do not have raisins. No. So what can state government do to help cranberry growers during these trade negotiations and opening up new markets beyond China?
Well, we've done some work with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection's marketing folks on looking at helping to grow some other markets. I think right now for our growers, there's probably not much the state can do on a national issue like this. We've been working with USDA, and they do have some, they have included cranberries in their trade mitigation efforts. They purchased some additional cranberries. They provided some additional funding to develop overseas markets, and they are providing growers this time with some payments under the MFP program, Market Facilitation Program. So there are some things that are offsetting or mitigating the impacts of, for us at the state level, I think the most important thing that the state government can do is continue to fund research positions at the University of Wisconsin and integrated ag specialists that we can work with. We recently invested heavily in a research farm for cranberries. Wisconsin didn't have one. We have one now, and it's up and operating, and it's important to have people that can work with our growers on problems that we're going to have as we look at regulations coming down the road. You know, everybody's talking about water, and we're keenly interested in how that issue is going to play out, and we want to make sure that we have the tools available and information available for our growers to comply with any new regulations that may come out. And so,
well, let's look at this USDA Cranberry Research Station. It's near Black River Falls. Is that right?
Right. It's for those that are familiar with central Wisconsin, it's 5 miles west of Millston, which is halfway between Tome and Black River. And it's set on Robinson Creek. It's 33 acres that we purchased from the Bible family, and they helped donate as well. Our foundation purchased it. We raised some funds from growers, and we raised some, we got some support from USDA's Ag Research Service. Senator Baldwin, Representative Pocan, Representative Duffy were all very important in helping us with that, in that the USDA's Ag Research Service has two scientists on Madison's campus now, and when we get through with the funding that's coming in, they'll have four working at Cranberry, which is a phenomenal resource for us. But we needed a place for them to do work, so we've got we modified the farm to create research plots that they can do replicated trials. We've got 2,100 different variety trials that were planted this year, and then we've got some commercial beds that were planted that work will be done on. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a world-class facility that we think is going to help our growers and our farmers for the next two or three generations, be perfectly honest with you.
talking with Tom Lochner. He heads up the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. We're looking at all aspects of the cranberry industry, including research. Do you work at a cranberry bog? What do you do? What is harvesting cranberries like? And what do you think of the trade war with China? How do you see these things affecting the cranberry market? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in the conversation. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Bev now, joining us from Richland Center. Hi, Bev.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is related to the growing of the cranberries. I eat a lot of cranberries, and I love them. I look for organic cranberries because somewhere a long time ago I read where cranberries are heavily sprayed with pesticides or insecticides or fungicides or something. So I was wondering if the industry is going more towards growing more organic cranberries. It is a little difficult to find them. I don't always find organic cranberries.
Bev, thanks so much for the call. Tom, what do we know about organic cranberries and how to get them?
Well, they are difficult to grow, and that's why they're difficult to get to find in the stores, but they are available. We have some organic growers here in Wisconsin. The challenge that they have is managing the crop. The yields are much less, and there's a lot of management practices, especially in weed management, that are difficult to address. And so we've worked with growers who are interested in organic. Our conventional growers have adopted integrated pest management practices, and we're moving and have been moving away from use of chemicals that are older chemistries that are much more harsh on the environment to what are referred to as softer chemistries that target a specific pest that we're trying to target, but don't end up causing impacting beneficial insects. We've reduced the pesticide usage dramatically. We look to control populations. We're using things such as mating disruption to control some of our insect pests. Growers are using spring floods to control some of the early season pests. So we've seen a dramatic reduction, not only in the use of pesticides, but in the risk that may be associated with it. We want to put a healthy food product out on the market for consumers. And one of the things that the industry has always done is try to make sure that our products that we put out there align with what consumers are looking for. And I think in the case of cranberries, we've seen that, especially here in Wisconsin, our use of chemicals has declined dramatically. We don't use fungicides very much, to be honest with you. So overall, we want to be growing them in a sustainable manner.
Do we have certified organic growers here in Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have some of them that are in the northern part of the state and a couple in the central part of the state, yeah.
Talking about the cranberry industry and the upcoming harvest mid-September, Tom Lochner is our guide. He heads up the State Cranberry Growers Association. You can join in. What do you want to know about how cranberries are harvested? Have you visited marshes, or is cranberry growing a big part of where you live? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email your questions on cranberries to ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back for more on cranberries in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the cranberry industry, the upcoming harvest here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The harvest usually starts mid-September, as we learned. It begins by partially flooding the beds with water. A tractor and a rack go through the beds to knock the cranberries off the vines. The beds are then fully flooded. The berries float on the surface of the water, and the berries are corralled to one end of the bed. And then they're siphoned off using a berry pump. The pump separates the debris from the cranberries. So do you go to cranberry festivals? Do you tour marshes, drive the cranberry highway, or take in other cranberry attractions? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We've been spending time with Tom Lochner. He's executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Let's go to Carl now, joining us from Phillips. Hi, Carl.
Hi there. Good morning.
I understand you're a grower.
Well, I try. I'm not always successful, but I try.
How's it going?
Well, it's going great. I turn on the radio this morning, and I hear my good friend Tom Lochner on the radio, and then you invited people to call. And so I thought I would call and just want to touch on Bev's comments. Actually, they were very good questions, and Tom did a great job of answering them. But I just wanted to reiterate what Tom said. As a cranberry grower, we really take a lot of pride in being sustainable. And I just want to let people know, when you buy Wisconsin cranberry, you can know that that's supporting local people, local families, and people who are very invested in the environment and having quality water. If you have a chance to tour a cranberry marsh, really, I encourage people to do that. You'll see wildlife that you don't see a lot of places. I mean, trumpeter swans, obviously Sandhill cranes, and that's all in the environment of the support lands for the cranberry marsh. So we really need that high-quality wetland that we are very invested in protecting. And I don't know, Tom, did you want to add to that?
No, I think, Carl, you nailed everything.
Carl, how did you get into the business in the first place?
Well, by trickery. I needed a job, and so I started at the bottom of the barrel picking weeds and as a summer job when I was going to college, and I really hated what I was going to college for, and I loved my summer job as a cranberry grower, and I did it for one summer and then a second summer, and then there was an opening at the marsh I was working at, and I asked the owner, and I was very appreciative. I said, what can I do to be full-time here? He said, stay in college and get a degree in soil science or something. So I did. And that's where it took off. And I love growing cranberries. And even though I'm not a sixth-generation grower, I love it. It's something about it that you just fall in love with. So that's how I got started, and we've been doing it since the early 90s.
Have there been good years and bad? How has it been year to year?
Well, it's always a good year if you're a cranberry grower, but some years you get paid and some years you don't. So that's just farming. That's just the way it is.
Well, Carl, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. Tom, it sounds like Carl has a really great attitude toward growing cranberries, and in the way he got started, he got hooked in those years as a summer job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, as I mentioned earlier, whatever your passion is in terms of a career, there's an opportunity in the cranberry business. Carl is a unique individual, and one of our better growers and good people that we have in the industry. But there's a lot of people like Carl who started a summer job. And who learned about cranberries, they became passionate about it, and growers would advise them to obtain the necessary skills they need to continue to work on the marsh, and they'll find a place for them to work. I mean, we're always looking for people who are passionate and want to work and want to be involved in cranberries. It's something that growers are involved in.
Well, Jim from Cedarburg emailed to ask, the words marshes and bogs, you hear it thrown around. What types of soil conditions do cranberries need?
Soil conditions, generally, when we plant, if you were to go out and plant a bed today, you would look for some, you would put a layer of sand down, which manages drainage, but we're looking for the acidic soil. That's the primary soil quality factor we're looking for. And then over time, the beds will build up organic material from the plants. But initially having that sand with organic soil or sand with an acidic soil, that allows us to manage the drainage in the beds. One of the things we do every 3 to 4 years in the winter, we flood the beds and create a layer of ice, 6, 8, 10, 12 inches of ice on top of the vines, and that serves as an ice mulch to protect them over winter. And every 2 to 3 years, growers will go in and put down a half an inch to an inch layer of sand on top of that ice. And as the ice melts in the spring, that sand settles on the vines and encourages new upright growth. It encourages new rooting, and it really is kind of a natural pruning process, but it also rejuvenates the vine, covers up insect eggs and disease, things like that. So sand is an important part of a cranberry marsh, and using, having an acidic sandy soils is important. Traditionally, growers years ago planted on peat, which again had the organic material, and that's where cranberries naturally grow.
Well, let's bring in the bees here. Most growers invest in commercial honeybee hives to pollinate their crops. What is that process like with pollination?
Well, cranberries will go into bloom in late June and early July, and growers, when we start to see them go into bloom, will bring in commercial honeybees. Depending upon the grower's management philosophy, they'll bring in 2 to 8 hives per acre. For pollination, and they'll be in until bloom is over. We also use commercial bumblebees for pollination, and then we've been doing a lot of work with the UW Department of Entomology on pollinator gardens. A number of our growers have planted them. We've got a study right now that's taking a look at pollinator gardens on cranberry marshes, what types of plants should be put in there so they're not competing, not blooming at the same time that cranberries are, and they're also not going to end up as weeds in the beds. And we've got a number of those projects that are ongoing. So we rely on native pollinators, but we bring in the commercial honeybees and bumblebees to supplement their activity.
Circling back to last year's crop, when a quarter of it was held back from the market, destroyed, what happened to that crop of cranberries, and how did you hold it back?
Well, the way the marketing order operates is pretty complicated, but essentially growers were allowed to deliver 75% of a normal crop. And we learned of the decision late in the season, but generally, the crop was a little bit smaller than normal. Some growers held tried to grow less, took beds out of production, things like that. But I think all of the fruit ended up coming in because of some of the exemptions that were in there. The regulation only applied to about 2/3 of the crop. And what happened was that the crop was delivered. Some of it was sorted out. Some of it was used for non-traditional markets, so went to animal feed. Some of it was land spread as a soil amendment. All in all, it was Mother Nature, I think, took care of a lot of that issue for us by our crop was a little bit short last year. So,
in the last few seconds we have with you, can Wisconsin do anything to make the market even better, more resilient?
They have a glass of cranberry juice every morning, and look for cranberry products in the stores. There's a lot of versatility to cranberries, so a lot of ways you can use them. If you have questions, you can go to our website at wiscran.org. We've got tons of recipes there and suggestions on how to incorporate them into your diet. Get some dried cranberries and simply sprinkle them on a salad. You can add them to that or also your oatmeal.
We get back to the oatmeal. Tom, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Tom Lochner is Executive Director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association. Just ahead, we look at state regulatory processes and how the Evers administration interrupted a new law on a public comment period for guidance documents from state agencies. We'll look at what this means in the process. That's after the top of the hour news here on the Ideas Network.